This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraja aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. We're here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am Christina McManigal. I'm flying solo today, although our producer, Lee Delapina, is here as well. But my co-host, Mike Penna, is MIA. We're kind of enjoying the peace and quiet, actually. But we're ready to get down to business. I'm here in our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I want to extend a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 and XM 206. And of course, all of you out there tuning into our website, we have our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. We have this show, we have other shows, and obviously I think this show is the best, but check it out. And right now, I'm here with a special guest, a jockey who has 2,732 wins, the second winningest female in North America, and the first female to win the Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice. I'm here today with Rosemary Holmeister.
Hi, Christina.
Rosemary, thank you for joining us. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
So tell us, where are you at these days? What keeps you busy?
Well, after I had my meet up in Arlington, Chicago, I went to Hawthorne briefly, and then I had decided to move my cat back to Tampa Bay Downs, where I've done very well in recent years. And I'm so glad that I did, because the weather here is beautiful, and from what I've heard up north, it's just been freezing and snow, and so I'm really happy with my decision.
Yeah, it's not nice up here. We're expecting more snow to come, but I'm going to begin to ask you a question I'm sure you get quite often, because the people I've talked about the show this evening, they all ask me, why the junior, Rosemary Holmeister Jr.?
This is hysterical, because this is 23 years into my career, and I still get this same question since the beginning. The reason it's a junior is because my mother and I both have the same first, middle, and last name, Rosemary Bernadette Holmeister. And my mother's been training racehorses for about 40 years. But when I started riding, the public thought that my mother was training and riding for other trainers, which would have been the conflict of interest.
Of course.
So Calder, they tried to change my name, Rosie, Roseanne, all different kinds of names, Rosie, I think. And I said, no, my name is Rosemary Holmeister. I said, just stick the junior on the end and that'd be done with it. So, junior has stuck, and it's always like a topic or a question I get all the time, which I think is funny. You know, it actually brings attention to me, so that's fine. But legally, I'm not a junior. I'm just Rosemary Holmeister.
It's your trademark. So you mentioned your mother. You mentioned your mother. And if I'm correct, I believe both of your parents were jockeys at one point. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, my father, James Paul Holmeister, he had won over 500 races. And they had told me that he had won most of his races in the what do you call it, Mid-Coast, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arkansas, that type of area.
And
Midwest, that's what I meant to say.
Right. I gotcha. And your mother rode as well.
Yeah, she did. She had a very short career because she had trouble with her weight. Not that she was heavy, but it was hard for her to get her weight under 110 pounds. And when you start out as an apprentice, you usually have to tack, you know, from 101 pounds to 103 pounds at that time. Actually, when I was riding, that's what I was having to tack, like 103 to 106, meaning, you know, all my jockey's clothes, my boots, and my saddle, when I would stand on the scale, it would have to be 103 pounds. So my mom was having a difficult time, but she did win one race, and the horse's name was Winning News, so that's her claim to fame. Mm-hmm. So when I won my first race, I said, "Mom, we're tied." You know, and she laughed. But my mom's been one of my biggest supporters. She taught me everything that I know about racing, how to start, and, you know, just keep a positive attitude and keep moving forward. And, you know, because it is, the business is like a roller coaster. You're up and you're down. You're up and you're down, you know, and racing is a lot of hope, luck. And if you can just keep your mind focused on your turn is coming back around again, if you're in a lull, you know, and once you win a race, it's like, oh, I'm back. You
exactly.
know, so it's probably the most exciting career that there could be out there. Even with the peaks and valleys that it has, it's just the highs are so high, you know, that's what keeps us all going.
Exactly. Well, tell us about those early days when you first found that interest in racing.
Well, I probably can say I wanted to be a jockey ever since I was like 2 years old, because I was pretty much bred into the business since both my parents were jockeys and still working on the racetrack. I basically was born and raised at Calder Race Course pretty much until I started school, because I was always going to work with my parents, you know, getting on the pony in the morning. I was always around the thoroughbred racehorses, going to the races in the afternoon. So it was always kind of set in my heart that I wanted to become a jockey. And once I got into high school, you know, my interest changed. You know, I got into cheerleading and track and, you know, just friends and going out and stuff. And probably after my senior year, I started to work with the yearlings, because my parents, or my mom and my stepdad, Larry Lyons, had always gotten yearlings in the wintertime, and they would break them on our farm and bring them to the track, you know, starting January, February, to get them ready to run as two-year-olds. So I started to kind of do that. I was going to college at the time. I went to college for a year for computer programming. And so I was breaking yearlings every morning, waking up probably 3 o'clock in the morning to feed them, go back to bed for about 2 hours, get back up. We always had 15 yearlings at a time. We had 7 colts and 8 fillies, or vice versa. So I would help my mom and Larry get the babies ready, you know, to learning with the tack and the bridles and, you know, getting on their backs and stuff like that. And then I would go to college during the day, like from 11 to like 2:30, something like that. So I did that for 2 years. And then after my second year of breaking the yearlings, I decided, you know, they decided, you know what, you're going to go to the track with the babies, you know, as two-year-olds. Well, actually the first year, I'm sorry, I just had started, and they brought me the first year in with the two-year-olds. So I knew them. So I was kind of learning with them. Mm-hmm. And I think after my second year, then they said, you know, how do you like it? This and that. And once I started breathing, I was just like, oh my God, this is awesome. You know, I mean, I could never imagine being on a horse going that fast. It was just such a rush, you know, and then going to the gate for the first time and the power that they have leaving the gate, you know, and these are just babies just learning. So it just kind of set in my mind, like, oh, I'm definitely going to be a jockey. And I, at that point, my mom was, now she's started conditioning me, and, you know, we would jog like 3 miles every day. She'd have me swimming. We got an equisizer from a jockey named Clyde Martin at the time, Dave Penna. He was one of the top riders in the country at the time. He would always sit with me and talk to me and, you know, teach me about riding and, you know, watch replays with me. Jacinto Vasquez, a Hall of Fame jockey, he was another guy that always helped me, you know, kind of get my mind right for racing, and, you know, just sit and watch replays with me and just give me their insight about racing. So I really had a good, solid background and help, you know, getting started with my apprenticeship.
Right. You were really immersed in it all. And did you find it was natural when you first sat on the horse? Was it something that just came naturally to you?
Yeah, well, I was always, you know, I've been getting on horses. My mom said since I was 6 months old, I mean, she would put me on the horse with her. I always had horses, ponies. I was doing horse shows since I was like 4 years old, you know. So it was, you know, like I said, it was bred right into me, you know, being a jockey with my parents and just growing up constantly with the horses around, you know, on our farm. We always had horses and ponies, and the thoroughbreds would come home, you know, to rest for a month or 2 months, you know. So I would always help my mom you know, from the ground up, you know, with bandages and cleaning stalls and, you know, stuff like that. So it was kind of like to ride them and stuff was natural, but with thoroughbred race horses, they're so different because they're very high strung and they're just, you know, you have to have more of a finesse with your hands. And that's, I learned that with the yearlings.
Right.
Because, you know, you put a bit in their mouth and they're just like, I don't know what is in my mouth, but we're going to go this direction. You know,
exactly.
So, and my mom had taught me a lot with my hands to be more patient, you know, don't snatch on them, just have patience with them and guide them and teach them, you know, and stuff like that. Because with thoroughbreds, you don't use legs, you know, like if you were in a show ring on an equitation or a Western horse, you know, you're using your body movement and more of your hands, you know, in their mouth because they're trained to run on the bit. So it was totally different from my horse show days. But, you know, breaking the yearlings, like I said, really helped me to learn more about the thoroughbreds and to get, I think, more balance too, because they would duck on out from underneath me in like 2 seconds, like, whoop, they're gone. I'm like, where's my mount? You know? And so it was a lot to learn, and it was different, but I loved it. I mean, I truly loved it. And I think just having so much help from different jockeys, my mom, my stepdad, you know, coming into the business really molded me and helped me.
Of course, of course. And when did you decide you were ready to do it? You were ready to take out your apprentice jockey's license?
Well, it was the year of 1992. And I guess I started March 20th of 1992. And in February, a jockey agent named Richard Ancona had come up to me and asked me to become my agent. And I'm like, well, what's an agent? You know, I really I never really knew what all that was about, because I was more trying to learn about the basics of racing and riding and gate work and stuff like that. And when he had come talk to me, he was referred to me by a trainer, Emmanuel Totora, which was one of the top trainers, the leading trainers at Calder for years. And I actually rode for him in the Kentucky Derby on Super Blitz. So it's kind of a nice story, you know. Right. And when he asked to take my book, I mean, my mom was just like, yes, you're taking him, because he was one of the top agents, you know, at Calder. And actually, a very well-known agent. He had very good riders throughout his career at the time as well. And I'm really glad that I did, because he did a lot of talking with me when we'd walk around the back, you know, walk in the backside going from barn to barn to see trainers. I mean, he would have my whip in his hand showing me how to, you know, like, here, this is what I want you to do. And I don't even think he ever sat on a horse. But, you know, he had such an eye for what he was looking for and what he wanted to teach me. He was constantly teaching me as we were working in the morning. You know, we would go into barns and I would kind of follow behind him, you know, and he'd walk up to the trainer and say, oh, I want to introduce you to my jock. And he's like, where the heck she go? You know, and I was like behind him, you know, and he'd like pull me around. This is, you know, Rosemary Hollmeister. She's just starting this and that. And I'm not even a shy person, but I guess, you know, anytime you change or try something new, it's the unknown.
Sure.
So you're kind of like, oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, I don't know what to say. What do you want me to say to this trainer? Like, I don't know what to do or say. Or so I'd kind of stand there. And so after about not even, I don't know, 3 or 4 days of that, he says, now we're walking into this barn and you're going to walk in front of me and you're going to ask this trainer. You're not going to ask. You're going to tell him, I want to ride this horse for you and I will win on it. And I was like trembling. I was like, what? You know, and I mean, I was only 19 years old, but I did it. And once I did it for the first time, it was like, and the trainer was very responsive and accepted. And I think we did actually get them out. I was like, oh, that's not that bad. You know, so every barn we went to, he would make me do it just to get that confidence and the feel for it and, you know, what to say and, you know, how to listen and stuff like that. So it was a great learning experience and a learning process how to, you know, he was molding me into the jockey that he wanted me to be and, you know, how to present myself and represent myself as a professional, you know.
Exactly. I always tell people that being a jockey is almost like a politician or an actor or something of that sort, where you're always on. You always have to be very personable, be very confident. And it's not something that, you know, you have to get used to, I guess. But he obviously, your agent obviously served you very well. Do you remember who was your first winner?
Yes, my first winner was for trainer Anthony Pecoraro, which I still ride for him this day, 23 years later. The horse's name was Mezzanotti.
Nice. Do you remember, were you a long shot or were you the favorite?
Oh, yeah. No, he was 6-5 favorite. And I remember his instructions to a T. He told me, he goes, when you break, he goes, I do not even want you, I want you holding the knot in the reins. And he had like the longest reins on this horse. And he's like, I do not want you to touch the horse's mouth. He goes, when you break out of the gate, just sit there and hang on to the mane and the knot and do not move. And I was like, okay, yes, sir. Well, the horse broke, went wire to wire. It was a 5th off the track record with a loop in the rein.
Wow.
Coming down the stretch. I mean, the horse is just push button, you know.
Mm-hmm. Gotta love
this
guy.
He knew the horse was going to win.
Right.
So, I mean, it was a fun, exciting experience. I mean, to win your first race, it's just like, oh my God, you know, and it just gets better from there.
Exactly. I remember very well, Rosemary, when I won my first race at Tampa in 2010, you were part of the group who initiated me quite well after that race. You remember that? You got me pretty good.
I think I have the picture. I still have the picture.
For those of you who don't know, when a jockey wins their first race, the other jockeys in the jocks room will typically go out and they will douse them with hot water, ice water, eggs, baby powder, you name it, they'll get them pretty good. And I was quite messy afterwards. I remember that.
Yeah, and it's exciting because you're so happy that you won. Like, you're just, they're like throwing stuff all over you, mud from the bucket, shaving cream, and you're just like, you're so happy you can't even stop smiling, and they're like shoving shaving cream in your mouth, you know, and you're just like, I don't care, this is awesome.
You don't know,
but it is exciting and it's a good celebration.
Oh yeah. Oh, I remember. So in 1992, you were the first female to win an Eclipse Award for Outstanding Apprentice, but not in the typical way. In fact, you did not even think you had won the award originally. So tell us that story.
Well, I had been riding. I started my racing career at Calder Racecourse. And after 2 months of racing there, my agent decided to go to Monmouth Park for the summer. So we went to Monmouth Park as the third leading apprentice at Monmouth Park in 1992. And then we moved our tack after that meet closed to the Meadowlands. And my first week riding at the Meadowlands, I was leading rider. And going into the second week of the meet, I was riding a horse named Toymaker for Phil Sturby on the turf. I'm on a 16th on the turf. And I was coming around the quarter pole turn. I was in front. And we were coming down the stretch. And I remember I was hitting left-handed coming around the turn. And I switched sticks to my right. And at that time, the Meadowlands had the lights on the very top of the building. So I pulled my stick out from the left hand and went to reach up and reach back and hit. And when I did that, my horse switched leads and jumped the temporary turf rail. And we took it down for about a 16th of a mile. The horse lived. I lived, thank God.
Wow.
But I did break the iliac crest on my hip. So I was out 2 months for that. And at that point, before that happened, I was the leading apprentice in the country by wins and earnings. And but I was in a battle with another jockey, Jesus Bracho. So that 2 months kind of set me back. And instead of staying at the Meadowlands, we left. I still had the same agent, Richard Ancona. He decided, let's just go back to Calder, finish out the year there. And I actually, I think I ended up with more wins than him, but he had more money earned than I did. But he had like a two-month advantage on me, you know. So, you know, I wasn't thinking anything of it. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to get the Eclipse Award now because, you know, I was out and I don't think I'll get it. But my mom was just like very excited. And she's like, you deserve that Eclipse Award because you came back so strong and winning, and you still have more wins than he does. And, you know, even though he has more money, well, he ended up beating me out for the Eclipse Award. And, you know, I just kept moving on. And, you know, as a jockey, it's an award that, yes, you would love to win and it's prestigious, but you just got to keep moving forward and turning left in racing. No matter where you are, what you're doing, just keep going, you know. So I just continued on. And I think, like, I don't know if it was a year later, they caught Ibar Koa. He was the first apprentice jockey to get caught that he had falsified his record saying that he was an apprentice, but he had been racing I think, for a year or two already in Venezuela. So once they caught one, then it started coming out of the woodwork. And I think they caught about four or five different riders that had falsified their records and that had really been journeymen. You know, they had the experience, over a year experience of racing already until they came to our country. So Jesus Bracho, the one that beat me out for the Eclipse Award, he was one of those riders that got caught. And they, you know, I think they'd suspended each rider differently. I think Ibar Coet had gotten 6 months and the other riders got, I don't know, two to four months or something like that. And once that happened, they disqualified Jesus Bracho for the Eclipse Award. So obviously it goes to the next person down the line. Right. Well, they wanted to just mail me the Eclipse Award. And my mother was not having it. She's like, my daughter deserves to, you know, have a, you know, go to the awards banquet and get recognized for everything that she did that year and how it was, you know, taken away from her from, you know, by somebody that cheated, basically. And it, she fought for, I think, 2 years for them to do the right thing. And she, they finally did. They brought us out to Washington. Washington, D.C., over by Maryland?
Yes.
Or Washington. It's just Washington.
Washington, D.C.
Where they had the Eclipse Award dinner. And they did. They, you know, I got to sit and they recognized me as apprentice for 1992. I think in 1994, 95, I think Dale, what was his name, that apprentice that year? Dale, I haven't pictured in my mind, but I can't think of his last name right now. But he was the apprentice that year. So, you know, it was nice to get honored and everything. It's kind of, for me, really, though, it was like, I wish I would have won it that year. But, you know, it is what it is.
Good for her for fighting for that, though. That's, awards ceremony is such a big deal. Good for her.
It is, yes.
So that's fantastic. So you mentioned earlier your Kentucky Derby mount, and you were only the fifth woman ever to ride in the Kentucky Derby. So that had to be very satisfying. You have to think at a time like that, yes, I've made it. You have to be so proud of yourself.
Yeah, it was very exciting. You know, I was riding that horse. I had won the stake on him, and I had finished second in the, I think it was the Florida Stallion Stakes. And I had probably, I think I finished three or four seconds on him. He was a closing sprinter. I think 7/8, I used to win races on him or come second because he would just be so far back and just come flying. And when I got the phone call to ride him in the Kentucky Derby, I remember I was driving home from work that morning. I was just beside myself. I was like, when Manny Tutora had called me, he's like, you know, we were talking to the owners and they're really happy with the way, you know, you're riding this horse. You know him very well. You know, we would all like to know if you'd like to ride him in the Kentucky Derby. Now, mind you, the Kentucky Derby was in a week. So they didn't give me very much time.
No.
I was like, what? You know, and I said, yes, sir, I would love to ride your horse. As I'm holding in my excitement, you know, when I hung up the phone, I was in my car and I was like screaming like, oh, my God, you know, it's like the best thing ever. And it was. I mean, I went out there 5 days before the Derby and it was, what an experience. I mean, you don't know thoroughbred horse racing until you're at the Kentucky Derby or even the Breeders' Cup. I mean, it is just every person on every street corner, every gas station, hotel, motel, whatever you want to call it. Everybody knows what's going on those Kentucky Derby days. You know, the Oaks Day, the Derby, they know exactly who won the first race, every race, what jockeys were there. I mean, it was just so exciting. There's so much media attention and reporters and news stations. And I mean, it was just, it was like overwhelming, but awesome, you know? So I did so much in the 5 days that I was there. And then when you race on Kentucky Derby day, I mean, it is standing room only, you know, and just the fans. And, you know, like after I rode the Derby, I came back and I was signing autographs for an hour after the race.
Wow.
You know, it was just, the fans are so excited. And it was just such a memorable time in my racing career. I mean, it was awesome.
Of course. Of course. You mentioned your fans, and I always admired the way you treated your fans. You always took the time, no matter if you had seven horses left to ride in the card, you would always take time and take pictures or sign autographs with your fans. Whenever I saw you at Tampa, you were always so attentive to those people.
Well, it's so important, you know. I mean, it would be boring if, first of all, if the fans weren't even there, you know, come down the stretch like you're working in the morning, you know. But the fans, you like, I want them to feel the excitement that I feel in the races and, the you know, give them that detail of, oh, man, you know, if the horse would just give me a little bit more, or, you know, they're just so excited to and thrilled to see horse racing. And, you know, for them, it's like jockeys are celebrities. You know, we don't look at ourselves like that, but, you know, the fans do, because it's just different. And it's something that it's like watching a race car driver or something. I mean, I couldn't do that, you know. And there's a lot of people that look at jockeys like, I can't believe you like just sit on your feet. You're standing up the whole time. How do you do that? You know, you get funny questions like that. And I just love it. I love to give back to the racing fans, you know, what it's given to me. You know, and I just want them to be a part of it. Like when Calvin Burrell won the Kentucky Derby, I mean, I ride every day. And when he won that race, he made me, I'm watching it on TV and I'm a jockey, but I was watching him coming back after winning the Kentucky Derby, and he made the fans, people watching on TV, felt a part of that. Like I felt like I was there. You know, it was emotional. It was exciting. I was so happy for him. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, I put myself in the fan's shoes like, man, I hope that, you know, I'm giving that same kind of thing back to the fans so they could be excited and bring their friends and, you know, bring the kids, because these are beautiful animals. The horses are just so prestigious and they're powerful, you know, and beautiful animals. And it's just, I just want that projected out from our racing industry, just positiveness, you know.
I think you definitely represent the sport well, and you share that enthusiasm so well. Really quickly before we go to break, you always blow a kiss to the sky when you win a race. Tell us about that really quickly.
Well, I started that in, I think, 1993. My grandparents lived in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, and when I started riding at Monmouth Park that summer, my grandparents would come every single day of racing to come watch me ride. I mean, they were my biggest supporters, my number one fans. And when I ended up moving, and then I went to Monmouth Park to Meadowlands, and then I went back to Florida, they couldn't go, obviously, because they were in New Jersey. And I always would tell my grand, and after the races, my grandfather would always call me, and he would, you know, he was in his probably at that time, 70s, I guess, mid-70s. And he would call me every day after the races, and he would love to hear my stories and how the horses went and, you know, what the feeling was, and, you know, good or bad. You know, he always wanted to hear everything. So when I went to Florida, you know, he was just like, oh, I miss going to the races so much, this and that. I said, you know what, Grandpa? I said, every time I win a race, I'm going to blow a kiss to the camera, and that's for you and Grandma, just so you know that I know you're watching me still riding. And that's how I just started doing that, and it just stuck. And the reason I blow a kiss to the sky now is because both my grandparents passed. And I just want them to know that I still know that they're looking down on me and watching me and that I love them.
That is a great story, Rosemary. We're going to continue our visit with jockey Rosemary Hohmeister after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
For racing coverage from the inside out.
I still kicked away, and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet. Woo!
Tune in to HRTV, the network for horse sports. Online at hrtv.com.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage.
At the Phase at Tipton Saratoga selected yearling sale, and one person who figures prominently here, celebrity chef Bobby Flay, and nice enough to have a few minutes to spend with us here. And Bobby, happy to have you.
It's always good to be in Saratoga, and the sales are so fun. It really is a giant cocktail party. And then, oh, by the way, we're also selling million-dollar horses.
Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Winchester between horses, still six lengths off the lead. Gentleman Chester to his outside off the far turn. Yates Black Cat moves up between horses to take the lead from Free Fighter. Timeless Fashion far outside is third. American is fourth. Cloudy's Night fifth. Winchester is sixth. Timeless Fashion and Yates Black Cat side by side past the eighth pole. Cloudy's Night is running late with Winchester. Yates Black Cat, Timeless Fashion, Cloudy's Night, Winchester. Cloudy's Night, Winchester coming forward. Cloudy's Night, Winchester. Cloudy's Night gets there by a head from Winchester and Yates Black Cat. Then Timeless Fashion was fourth in 2 minutes, 30 and 4/5 seconds.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal. I'm joined tonight by jockey Rosemary Holmeister. Rosemary, tell us about that race with Cloudy's Night winning the Sycamore Stakes at Keeneland. You, together as a team, found so much success.
Yeah, that is probably one of my most memorable, exciting race horses to ride for trainer Jonathan Shepherd. He was huge. He was about 17 hands. And before I go on, he's got such a great home in Chicago. His owners absolutely love him. So I think he's been jumping and loves it, you know. So I'm glad that he retired and is very happy. But so I had a lot of success with that horse, and Jonathan had just brought that horse into Delaware one summer, and he said, "I want you to get on this horse, just get the feel from him because you're going to ride him in Kentucky Downs." I said, "Great, no problem." I mean, you talk about a gentle giant. He did everything perfect on the track. You know, he was not push button by any means, but he just knew what he wanted to do and he knew how to do it. Basically, you just needed to be a passenger on him, because if you tried to tell him what to do or try to show him, he was going to show you, you know, and we just kind of clicked and right from the first day that I got on him. And I rode him in Kentucky Downs and I won the stake on him. And from there, I mean, we just kept continuing success. That race in Keeneland was really exciting because, as you can hear, this the call, when we got to the eighth pole, I mean, I'm like eighth, you know, in the back of the field. And I remember coming around the quarter pole and I was just like, come on, you know, pick it up. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I'm just thinking, gosh, I think he's one of the favorites. I'm like, why are you sitting way back here? Well, he was very competitive and we were like kind of passing horses, but he wants that fight with another horse. And all of a sudden here came Ramon Dominguez mm-hmm. and just like busted through. I think he was on my outside, Ramon. I'm trying to, he came through on the inside. Well, when he hooked this night coming to the eighth pole, Cloudy rebroke. I mean, just grabbed the bit. I mean, basically all I had to do was steer and we were coming.
Grab the horse.
Okay, honey. I'm telling a story. and basically I just had to steer. Well, if you watch the head on this race, I mean, there is like no room. And we were basically, Ramon Dominguez and I, we had so much horse. We were just like kind of pushing through holes that were kind of not there, but for some reason just kept kind of opening up. And as we were coming down to the wire, the last 70 yards, I mean, we are in a battle. Cloudy's Knight, they're head and head with Winchester, just fighting it out. And I mean, Cloudy's Knight was not giving up. He kept sticking his head out. And all of a sudden, I felt this like bang, like on my hind end, my horse's hind end, and it turned him in. And I bumped into Ramon. Well, so he hit the wire. And I'm like, oh, I won. But I wasn't excited because I'm thinking, oh no, hope I didn't just do that. I'm going to get disqualified. And as we're galloping out, you know, Ramon Dominguez is class. Just, I Ramon is like my little buddy, you know, because I knew him when he came to Calder, you know, when he first started his apprenticeship and, you know, started riding and I had already been riding, you know, and then he was like the leading rider in the nation for how many years, you know?
Right.
So we're galloping out, like, just the first 70 yards galloping out. And he's like, Rosemary, I'm really sorry, but I need to claim foul. And I said, I understand. I said, I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know if my horse stepped in. I don't know what happened, you know? So, we get all the way around. I get to the phone and, you know, Ramon's on the phone talking to the steward saying, you know, his horse got knocked by me and cost him the race and, you know, but nice. He wasn't being, you know, aggressive or anything like that. And as I'm watching the head on, I'm like, it wasn't my fault. There was a horse inside of Ramon. When the rider was hitting him left-handed, the horse kept stepping out. Well, when he hit him one more time, his horse ducked out and slammed into Ramon and Ramon ended up knocking. Well, his hind end got pushed out and knocked into my horse hand, which when you push the horse from the inside, their hind end out, it turns their front end into the inside horse. So when I'm watching this, I get on the phone. I said, Judge, I said, that's not my fault. I said, look at the replay. And I, you know, reiterated that. And you could see, and even Ramon, when he got off the phone and he looked at the replay, he goes, oh my gosh. And he just didn't say, I just heard him say, oh, okay. You know, like he knew it wasn't my fault. So after I got off the phone, I mean, they made it official. They still took a little time because you have to prove to the public, you know, the claim of foul and make sure that they could see that it was not the winning horse, but they did make it official and it was so exciting. And, you know, as class, I mean, Ramon was so class. He just came up to me. He's like, Rosemary, I'm really sorry. Congratulations. Because I didn't realize at the time. And I told him, I said, I didn't either, you know, cause it's so fast. The adrenaline's, you know, going through your veins and you're just like trying to get to that wire. You know, your vision is just like, get to the wire first, you know? And, but it was so exciting when they, you know, made the race official and I won the stake, you know, and I mean, being at Keeneland, I mean, that's like one of the premier prestigious meets, you know, in the country every year. And to go out into the middle of the turf course and, you know, take the winning photo picture with the owners and the trainer. And I mean, it was really that horse has brought so much excitement to my racing career. You know, I got to ride him in the Breeders' Cup and I got beat a nostril hair. I wish it would have been a dead heat, but you know, riding him in Canada, winning a race in a mile and three quarter race in Canada when it was like 17 degrees out, I couldn't feel my hands.
Wow.
You know, I mean, this horse just knew how to win, how he needed to be ridden. And, you know, you just, like I said, you just had to be a passenger and just let him do his thing. And it was just, he was an amazing, amazing thoroughbred.
He was so big. He had such a huge stride, and he would come from out of the clouds and close like that. I love watching all of his races. He's incredible. And that Sycamore Stakes you mentioned, that had to be nerve-wracking. That's quite the story. You were quoted as saying that you mentioned the Breeders' Cup, that was your most memorable racing experience in your life. And like you said, yeah, you didn't win. You got beat in Nostril, but tell us about that.
That was just, you know, like I said, you know, riding Cloudy's Night into all, you know, in all stakes, and just wherever Jonathan would send us, he'd win, you know, and it was so nice. And you just had so much confidence that you had a shot no matter what. And when Jonathan and the owners asked me to ride him in the Breeders' Cup, I was like, yes, I would love it. Mm-hmm. And then knowing the Breeders' Cup was 1.75 miles, which I just won that, you know, distance in Canada, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so great. And, mm-hmm, you know, it was a huge field, and he was so great in the post parade. He didn't get nervous through the public and, you know, just the fans and screaming and cheering. I mean, he just was so professional, this horse. And, you know, coming down to the wire, he actually was, if he had a focus on a horse, he wasn't going to let them buy him. And when we got down to the stretch, actually the favorite was on my outside, and he had his eye on that horse on the outside. And we put that horse away, I think, at coming to the, well, about the, I don't know, middle of the 16th hole and the 8th hole. And he did not see the horse on the inside that nailed us right on the wire. And I, like, you know, thinking back now, oh, I should have just turned his head slightly to the left, you know, because I know if he would have saw him coming, that, mm-hmm, horse would never have passed him, because I know he would have rebroke again, because, mm-hmm, he was just that game. But you know what? It was the experience, the excitement, and, you know, just being there and able to ride a big race like that on such a talented horse was just a great memory.
Oh, exactly, exactly. So you have accomplished so many record-breaking goals as a female jockey. And in 2001, you were invited to Puerto Rico, and you became the first female to win the Clásico Internacional de Caribe, if I'm pronouncing that right.
Clásico de Caribe.
There we go. What was that like?
That was really exciting because, you know, I'd never even heard of it before. And I was riding for a trainer, Pepe Mendez, at Calder Racecourse. And the horse, there, you know, people were talking about it, and my agent was saying, you know, they might ask you to go ride a big stake race in Puerto Rico. And I was like, oh, and I think I was like second or third leading rider at the time at Calder. And I was like, oh, really? You know, like, well, what is it? And he was explaining, well, this is like the Kentucky Derby of the Caribbean Islands, you know, and the horse is going to get in with 108. And they couldn't find, you know, they wanted Cornelio Velasquez to go. They named like 3 different riders that they had asked to go, but they were all like, they couldn't pack under 17,
wow,
you know, and this was going to be a filly against the boys. So they wanted every advantage, you know, to try to win this race or even hit the board with a filly, you know, against the boys. And I was one of the top riders at Calder, and I was riding for, you know, Pepe Mendez, which was very close with the owners and the trainer in Panama. So they had asked me to ride the horse and, you know, can you do the weight? And I said, yeah, I can do the weight. That's not a problem. And that's how I ended up getting the mount, because I could do the weight, you know?
Wow.
And so I went over there and, you know, it was funny because I remember I was married at the time, and I'm on the airplane and I'm eating like whatever kind, like, I don't even remember what it was called, but it was the lightest bag of healthy chips, you know, it weighed like an ounce. You know, because I wanted to make sure that I was full, I wasn't starving, but I didn't have to reduce, but I couldn't eat that day anything heavy because it would put weight on me,
right,
put it that way. Wow. So I remember eating these chips and make sure the weight was like nothing, you know. So by the time I got there, I think it was like 105 pounds or something. And then when it's all my, oh no, it was 109 that I had to tack. So that was 106 pounds. So with my tack and everything, I was perfect 109 on the scale.
Wow.
And it was, wow. What that was definitely an experience, because I'm in Puerto Rico And probably 80, well, about 90% of the people there at the racetrack do not speak English. So, you know, I was lucky that I had my husband there at the time because he was from Puerto Rico, and he made sure everything was done right. He made sure I, you know, whatever they wanted from me, you know, he translated everything and stuff. And it was just an experience, you know, just at that point. So then we went out to ride the race. So we're in the post parade, go to the gate, and they're telling all the riders to get off their horses. And I'm like, what are they talking about? You know, I'm like, why are we going to get off the horses? And mind you, it's 104 degrees out. So we're like, wow, sweating, you know? And so everybody gets off their horses, and some guy comes up to me with a metal detector. And I'm like, what are they doing? I had no clue of what was going on. Well, they were checking for batteries.
Uh-huh.
Because I guess it's a common thing in Puerto Rico that riders ride with batteries. But they didn't want, you know. Yes, honey. And, you know, so I was like, okay, that was weird. You know, then they put all the riders back on the horses. We loaded in the gate. Thank you, Mama. Thank you, Mama.
Read it like this. Mom,
I have a 3-year-old daughter that loves horses too.
I think we need to talk about her here for a bit.
Well, I'll finish the story real quick. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we get back in the gate, and I don't know what happened. Okay, wait you 1 second, honey. I'm on the radio station talking, okay? And I'll be right back.
No, don't be right back.
I'm sorry. So anyway, we get in the starting gate, and then they're like, there's a holdup. I can't remember if a horse wouldn't load or they had to back one of the horses out or something like that. We must have been standing there in the gate for, I don't know, 8 minutes, you know, and how all these horses were that good to stand in the starting gate that long was just, it probably wasn't 8 minutes, but it probably felt like that. It might have been closer to 4 or 5 minutes. But I just remember standing in the gate, just drenched in sweat. There was, like, no air. It was so hot, you know, and silly against the boys. And I'm just like, you know, so many things are going through my mind. And then I'm trying to keep, you know, who's got to be in this race? Where am I going to be sitting? I want to make sure I get a good break. And, you know, this filly has no speed, so she's going to be coming from behind. I mean, so all these things are going through my mind, you know, and all of a sudden they're like, all right, you know, in Spanish, telling us to get ready. And good thing I knew some Spanish at the time, you know. And so we break out of the starting gate, you know, and we're going into the first turn. And when you go into the turn going left, you're supposed to go left. Well, this rider next to me decides to carry me out for a hot dog. I'm talking, he pushed me out like 4 paths. And I'm like, what is this guy doing?
Wow.
You know, and this is one of the jockeys there in Puerto Rico. So all I did was take a hold of my filly and start pushing him back down, you know, and then he like sent his horse and he went on with it. So I just like tucked in, you know, and placed my filly where I wanted to be. And now we're coming to the 4.5, you know, and all of a sudden, like 6 horses in the field just blew by me. Like I was standing, I was like, where is everybody going? Like the wire is not at the 3/8 pole, you know? And I'm just like, so I never moved. I just held her in this position I was at because I'm not going to ask my filly to run that early. I'm never going to even hit the board. So I just watched them all blow by me. I mean, I went from, I think, position, I was like 5th or 6th, maybe 6-7 lengths back to like 13 lengths back at the 3/8 pole.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, so I started picking her up, started riding her. So when I hit the quarter pole, the filly started running. And we caught up to the horse that ended up being second that we beat by a head. And we hooked up with this horse, and it was on from the cold fire. We were rolling and just fighting it out. These two horses were so determined to win. And my filly, I mean, a filly against the boys. I mean, this is how amazing and competitive horses are. It doesn't matter what gender they are. They are very competitive. And when they have winning on their mind, they're going to do everything they can to get there. And when we got to the wire, I mean, we were riding it out and just boom, right at the wire, boom, I beat him. And it was the most exciting feeling you know, to know that I was on a filly against the boys, you know, and to accomplish that. And just so many things went through my mind, like, oh my God, I just won like the Kentucky Derby in Puerto Rico, you know? And it was, there had to be, you know, when, you know, you gap out and they do like what we do here, they interview you, which the guy was talking to me in Spanish. So I was just trying to understand as much as I could and, you know, talking and stuff. And when I got back to the winner's circle, no lie, there had to be 100 people in the winner's circle.
Wow.
I mean, this horse was surrounded. They put the flower over her neck. I mean, and she was so quiet. I couldn't believe it. There were so many people around her. I mean, even around her butt, everything. I don't know how she didn't even kick. But she just stood there and waited, and they took the pictures. And, I mean, the winner's circle must have taken about 10 minutes.
Wow.
Before they even got me off the horse, you know, and that's how awesome she was, you know, and it was just really exciting. And I was excited because my husband was from Puerto Rico, so it was exciting for him. His family was there, and so it was a wonderful experience.
What a cool story. She was probably tired is why she was so good in the winner's circle, you know, beating the boys.
Yeah,
you know, that's quite the accomplishment. My goodness. So as I said just a few minutes ago, we can all hear your daughter in the background, and she just sounds like the love of your life. And would you like to introduce your daughter to us and tell us about her?
Well, she won't talk on the phone.
Well.
She's in kind of her own zone. But, yeah, she is. She is the love of my life. I mean, everything that I do is for her. And, you know, she makes me feel so good because she's like, she'll tell me, good luck, Mama. Go win today. Mm-hmm. You know, and then if when she's there on race days and stuff like that, they'll bring her to the winner's circle and she'll look at me and she'll hug me. And she's like, Mama, I'm so proud of you. You know, she'll put her little hands on my face and I'm just like, oh my gosh, my heart just like splutters, you know, and she's just such a love. She loves the horses, you know, and she has her own, she's got like 3 horses. She's got a rocking horse, another horse, you know, in the apartment. And she's always getting up on the horse and standing up and then trying to ride it like a jockey. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I'm a jockey, Mama. I said, oh boy. You know, but it's so amazing how they mimic you, you know, but life would not be the same without her.
Watch out, future superstar right there. Watch out. Tell us the story a little bit about when you were riding and you found out you were pregnant and how that, you know, affected you at the time.
Well, it was a surprise. Like, I was not trying to get pregnant or anything. I was just, I had just started with an agent, Steve Elby, in Kentucky. And I had ridden the Churchill meet. It was the November Churchill meet at the time. And we did great. I ended up being 4th leading rider there and then going into Tampa. We started the meet out really strong and I was 2nd leading rider. And a week before I found out I was pregnant, like I said, I was not trying at all, but I mean, I had a boyfriend at the time and, you know, I just don't know how it happened, but, a week before I found out that I was pregnant, I was named on 6 races on the card and I won 5 out of the 6 races. And then a week later, I found out I was pregnant. And how I found out, I woke up at like, I don't know, like 2:30 in the morning. I was so nauseous. I'm like, oh gosh, I'm getting the flu. You know, I couldn't afford to get the flu because I had to ride so many horses that week and, you know, that day. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I don't know why. I'm like, you know, well, for years, I'd always, like, if I didn't get my menstrual cycle, you know, like on time, I'm like, you know what, let me just take a pregnancy test just to make sure, you know, because I knew as soon as I would, 2 days later, I'd get it, you know, so I'm like, okay, I'm fine. So I'm like, well, let me just omit that out, you know, just to ease my mind and, you know, just know that I'm getting the flu. Well, took the pregnancy test and, oh, a plus sign came up and I thought I almost fell off the toilet. I was like, oh my God, how did that happen? You know, I mean, it was so unexpected, not planned, and it was an emotional roller coaster, you know, and I rode for about 2 weeks once I found out, but I was so nauseous and I never said a word to anybody. It was very emotional for me. It was scary. You know, I didn't want to stop riding. I had so many future plans, you know, with my agent, Steve Elzey, to go back to Kentucky and ride for the summer. And, you know, we were doing so great. I was just, I felt like I was letting him down. I felt like I was going to let all the trainers that I'm fighting for and working so hard for. And it was such a weird feeling. Just the hormonal roller coaster that I went through was really hard. Like, and I had a beautiful, thank God, a very healthy pregnancy, except for the hormones. You know, I was just like on a roller coaster, up and down, up and down. I'd be watching the TV show, nice and happy, and all of a sudden I'd be crying for nothing. A commercial come on. I'm like, oh my God, you know. But when I had her, it was such a blessing. I mean, when they put her, pulled her out and put her up on my belly, I mean, you can't.
Good girl.
you cannot, if you're not a parent, but every parent that's listening right now, every mom that's had a child, when they put your, they pull your child out and just hold them up and put them on your belly, you cannot imagine the love that you have for this little beautiful baby that just came out of you. Like, it's so overwhelming, and it gets better and better and better. Like, I could just stare at her all day long. I mean, she's just so cute and beautiful, and the words that come out of her mouth and how smart she is. And, you know, like, I learned things from her just watching her, you know, how to love life again and just, you know, be happy about the little things and get excited about the little things. You know, it's just children, they just bring so much energy and love and kindness, you know, because they're real. They're not, you know, they don't know how to lie yet or, you know, tell stories or, you know, everything that comes out of their mouth is the truth. Sometimes it's not very nice, but
what you see
to it,
is
you know?
What you get.
But,
what you see is what you get, right?
Yeah, but, exactly.
She sounds absolutely adorable. And I've seen your website, of course, and you have pictures of her everywhere. Everyone, Google Rosemary Holmeister Jr. and you'll see it. She's absolutely adorable. What would you say if she decided to become a jockey?
I didn't hear you.
What would you say if she told you that she would like to become a jockey one day?
You know what? Whatever she decides that she wants to be when she grows up, I'm going to support her in whatever it is that she wants. Because if it's her passion and her love and she has her heart set on it, that's what I'm going to support her. And I will help her in everything that I can. I don't know if it's going to be easy. You know, I tell my mom, I'm like, now that I'm a mom, I'm like, how do you watch me race every day? You know, like, how did you do this when I was growing up? And she's like, just do it. You know, you have to be strong and you have to, you know, be there to support her. And, you know, there's going to be the good and bad moments, but you just got to be there, you know, and show support and not afraid. You know, like my daughter, from what I've learned from my mom is, since she's been born and started crawling and walking, and you know, if she would fall down or bump into something, I'm like, I go, did you go boom? And she would look at me. I'm like, come on, let's go, get up, let's go. You went boom. And she would just like look at me and go, okay. And just kind of, you could just shake her head and keep going, you know, because if you show fear, they're going to have fear. Right. You know, and I mean, there's times that she's like bumped her head or whatever it is, and she looks at me and the tears already start, and I know she's hurt. Because now, I mean, she'll be running and just, she just stumbles or falls down. She just pops right back up. She's like, up. She goes, I'm okay, Mama. I'm okay. And she just keeps running.
She's tough. She gets that from her mother.
Yeah, it's good.
That's fantastic. Rosemary, we are out of time. So thank you so much again for joining us on the show. I know you're very busy juggling everything you have to juggle, and we so much appreciate you coming on the show. And to our listeners, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out the podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.